Herzlich willkommen zum Paths of Purpose Podcast, dein Podcast für persönliche Weiterentwicklung, Leadership, große Visionen und Inspiration. Ich bin Simona Deckers, Mentorin und Gründerin von Shanti Company. Meine Mission ist es, Menschen mit zeitlosen Weisheiten zu empowern, ihre Visionen lebendig werden zu lassen und ihre großartigen Potenziale zu entfalten. Es ist meine Mission zu inspirieren, wie wir unser Leben verbessern, unsere Träume wahr werden lassen und in Leichtigkeit und Fülle leben. Heute sind Selbstwahrnehmung, Leadership und persönliche Weiterentwicklung die Fähigkeiten, die uns Sinn geben, uns privat und beruflich weiterbringen und erfüllen. Höre in diese neue Folge hinein, mach dir Notizen, stell dich auf Aha-Momente und neue Erkenntnisse ein. Teile diese Folge mit deinen Freunden. Die Welt braucht Positivität, Licht und Inspiration. Markiere mich oder schicke mir eine Nachricht auf Instagram oder LinkedIn, sodass wir connecten können. Auch dort findest du bei mir Motivation, Innovation und Power pur. Los geht's! So today I welcome John Strzelecki. John Strzelecki is a seven-time best-selling author, an inspirational speaker, and an adventure seeker. Welcome, John Strzelecki.
Thank you so much. So great to be here. I'm talking to a fellow adventurer, so that's always fun.
Thank you, John. John, you are so well known for your books and what do you experience, or which experience, or which incidents in your life catapulted you into your life and into writing your books?
It's, you know, interestingly, similar to your story, because I was doing some research about you, knowing that we were going to have a chance to have this conversation. I was on the fast track of life, and so I was very aggressively pursuing my career in business. I had had some very big challenges in my 20s and then locked into this world of high-powered consulting. And so I was doing that. And then I hit the point where I realized if I keep doing this, then I'm going to look ahead 10 years from now and be miserable, you know. And my grandfather had passed away. That was a very defining moment for me, to because he was in his 80s. And so I think anytime you have someone that farther down the path, it causes you to stop and reflect a little bit. And so for me, I realized, okay, either I'm going to massively burn myself out knowing that there was another life that I wanted to live, or I can be active in choosing that life, even though I don't know where it's going to lead me. And I think that's the part that requires the courage for all of us, is taking that leap in the direction that our heart calls us, even though we don't know exactly where it's going to go and where the storyline is going to end.
Exactly. And this is the uncertainty that you have to be comfortable with, right? You have to be so daring to jump off the cliffs and don't know where it will take you.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, as I read in your story, we have a reminder from our physicality. And so our body will just tell us, you know what, we can't keep playing at this pace. And so I'll just go ahead and shut things down for you until you figure out what you want to do or sort of get back in rhythm. And I think that's ideally we want to slow things down before we get to that point. But as we're going through the human experience, the learning process, often we don't know that. I didn't know that either. And so, you know, we get these reminders, and hopefully they're significant enough that then we can take that information and use it for the rest of our life instead of having to replay the same story again and again and again.
Yeah, this is so true. And you said that your grandfather's death was also played a pivotal role in your course of life, and this also something plays into it, some major
events that occur and that forces us to reevaluate our life, right?
Yeah, it can be something external to us, like someone that we know has, maybe someone gets diagnosed with a disease, or I mean, it can be something positive too. Someone that we know takes the big leap in the direction of their dreams and they go and backpack around the world, or they go and launch their entrepreneurial business, or whatever the case is. And that can be incredibly inspiring for us. And we realize, oh, well, I could do something like that too. I think that more often though, it tends to be something that is more in the category of sad. And so something challenging happens to us, or something challenging happens to someone that we care about, and that causes us to reevaluate the decisions we're making and the life that we're living.
Yeah.
I think the big thing is whenever we're challenged with something that puts time in perspective, it that reminds us that we don't have forever in this human form, that usually kind of rocks your world a little bit. And so that was certainly the case with me. I think that's the case with anyone who experiences someone close to them who either passes away or who experiences a massive illness, because it does, it reminds us that we're not immortal.
Exactly. That's so true. So purpose and meaning is central to your books and to your philosophy and to your way of living. What would you say is the meaning of life? How would you answer that question?
Yeah, the very first question in Das Café am Rande der Welt is, why are you here? And I've always been thinking about that question from as long as I can remember, which is kind of odd because I was literally thinking about it even back when I was a kid to some degree. I don't know exactly at what age it kicked in, but it kicked in pretty early. I would say probably around the time I hit double digits, so 9, 10, somewhere around there. I think what struck me is that I looked at life and said, okay, I sort of see the timeline of it. So you're going to live approximately 79, 80 years. And we spend an awful lot of time in school. And then after we're done with school, we spend an awful lot of time working. Most people don't love their jobs. So it all just seemed kind of out of sync, honestly, Simona. It was because I didn't really like school. I was good at school, but I didn't really like school because I didn't see the point. No one could help me understand how studying geometry was going to lead to something. And, you know, I'm sure if you're an engineer, it's very useful, but I wasn't going to be an engineer. So I had these kind of questions going on in my head, which all tie back to purpose. And the idea is that, okay, if we get statistically 28,900 days, then why? You know, is it just random luck that we were born in the human form and we weren't, I don't know, an elephant this time around, or we weren't, you know, a chimpanzee or something else? So we get this experience to be human, and what are we going to do with it? And why are we going to do that with it? And these are very obviously introspective questions, but to me, this is where we start to define the life that is going to be something extraordinary, or we end up at the end and say, oh, like, I don't know, it just was, you know? And so very early on, I thought, well, if I can figure out what I think is the purpose of life for me, and then I can start crafting a life that lives in alignment with that. Now, your question is really intriguing, and I've thought about this time and time again. Is there an overarching purpose to the human experience? And this is an interesting rabbit hole to go down. I do think there is. I think that we are here to learn, to grow, to progress, and that when we learn and grow and progress, each time we have an aha moment, each time we create something, that it enters the cosmic catalog, if you will. And so once it's in the cosmic catalog, it now becomes accessible to everyone. So I do that in the form of my books. And so someone could certainly read my books. But I think it's bigger than that, Simona. I think every time each of us has a thought or an awareness, that that thought or awareness is now out there in the ether and literally can be accessed by anyone else. They don't have to read it in a book. They can literally just feel it. They can sense it. Now, this still leads you down the rabbit hole, which is, well, why? Why is that the way that the game is designed? Well, you could say the universe is growing, and it's much more effective to grow when you have billions of entities out there learning and adding to this collective consciousness. Okay, that makes perfect sense to me. Why is the universe growing? You know, you sort of head down this rabbit hole, and I'm not sure there's an actual ending to that. But in the context of that, we can ask ourselves, well, what is my individual purpose? And that, I think, is really fascinating, because allowing ourselves to choose the reason that we're here and what we want to do with lives is one of the greatest gifts that we can give ourselves.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. And I'm really astonished that we see things the same way, John. I do believe.
Have you come to similar conclusions as you've analyzed life and analyzed what you feel is your purpose and the purpose of humanity? Have you arrived at a different conclusion?
I arrived at this exactly the same conclusion, but it was not through experimental living, but also through studying and reading books about metaphysics or spiritual philosophy and so on, that it dawned on me, this must be true. It somehow, I read these books and I felt this is true. Mm. And I want to live according to this truth because I know this will lead me to real happiness, you know. So, yeah.
And all around us are examples of where it's not working.
Mm.
You can see people who are very discontent in their life and don't have a sense of purpose, and therefore they just go through every day either in a state of frustration, anger, or a sense of disillusionment.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's even more challenging these days. I talk about in the fourth book in the Cafe series, Barashim Cafe, Amrana Developed, I talk about the concept of pleasantly occupied. That in the past, when I was a kid, that you would go through your day, and if you were bored, then you and your friends would say, well, what can we do that wouldn't be boring, right? What can we do that's fun, that's interesting, that we learn something, or we just enjoy the day? And now it's very easy to just look at your phone and be pleasantly occupied. You know, it's like a mildly numb state of reality. But if we're not careful, then in aggregate, that's our life. You know, years and years and years of just being mildly numb.
Yeah, absolutely. It's being distracted, numbed, distracted, and not living your own life, but being sucked into something that doesn't add, really, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there's, don't get me wrong, there's all kinds of reasons why in a given moment, at a given time, you just feel like being pleasantly occupied. You know, you want to be entertained by a TikTok video or whatever the case is. And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's your choosing, I think that's the key thing always with the human experience is, am I doing these things because I've actually consciously thought to myself, this is the way I want to spend my time? Or am I doing these things because I see this is what most people are doing, and therefore I'm just imitating most people's behaviors, as opposed to consciously thinking for myself, what do I want my life to be?
Exactly. That's the difference between being a creator and choosing consciously, being very conscious about what you do, and just going through the motion and not being aware, being in autopilot and not being aware of what you're doing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what is the message that you wish that readers get out of your books?
Well, my great hope is that everyone who feels called to read the Cafe books or the Big Five for Life or feels called to enter the world in which I write, that there is a reason that they feel drawn to that, that they too are seeking something more out of life than just the everyday, and that they find inspiration in those words and in those stories. That to me is one of the greatest things ever. And we just got some beautiful emails yesterday talking about that, about how much the books meant to the people that had read them. And, you know, I remember distinctly what it was like to be struggling to try to figure out, how does all this work? And there were nowhere near the resources back then that there are now, back when I was 18. And so I think it's part of my purpose on the planet is to share the things that I think about and the things that I've learned in the hopes that it can inspire people to then live an extraordinary life and do whatever is their purpose.
Yeah. And now you mentioned something. You said you were struggling when you were 18. So there was a time in your life where you had the impression or the feeling that you were not satisfied or that that life didn't have a meaning. And how did you manage to get out of that? What did you do?
Not easily. So I started off, you know, very introspectively asking myself these questions and going inside because I didn't know other resources that would help me. And so interestingly to that, would people often ask me, oh, have you read this book? Have you read this book? Have you read this book? And my answer is usually no. It's not that I don't like reading other people's books, but I find I live in my head for the most part. And so I find my inspiration through going deep into my thoughts and taking quiet time and reflection. And I think that's partly why I believe this concept that these learnings are out there in the collective consciousness, because I find these moments of inspiration, I have these ahas, and then not all that in often, I will then actually read a book and I see something in there that's very close to it. And I think, oh, that's interesting. Like, I learned that on my own, but somebody else already had that thought too, which means it was out there floating in the ether. Yeah. So I was very conscious in thinking about these questions, trying to be very internal in my thinking. And then certainly there were books that I came across that I realized, wow, okay, cool. Like, here's some different ways of thinking about this. And there was one called Illusions, a little book called Illusions, which is a short little book, but very profound in the way that it helped me think about my life.
Yeah. Were there other books or other authors that influenced you or that had an impact on you?
You know, it in different ways, yes. And so when I was a little kid, one of the series of books that I loved reading was Edgar Rice Burroughs. He wrote all the Tarzan books, which I think there was, I don't really remember, but it seemed like I would go to the library and there was like a whole bookshelf of them. But again, that's viewed for the lens of a little kid. But I think there's like 30 books. And that was a big influence on me because they're all about adventure. And they're all about other places other than where I lived. And so that introduced me to another world. And from a very young age, I thought to myself, I want to see that. I want to experience that. You know, I want to know what it's like to watch a lion on the African plains. So that was very inspiring and influential. And one of my great joys was when I left everything behind in my early 30s and backpacked around the world to actually be in Africa. I distinctly remember this feeling. I've shared this story and it kind of makes me laugh, but it's so true in its essence that I was in South Africa and I went to a place called Kruger National Park, which is just a massive section of national parkland. Mm-hmm. It's almost like an entire country that they have put fences around, and it's all wild in there. And when you arrive at the entrance gate, there's these massive giant wooden gate structures, and there's a little gatehouse, and you go into the gatehouse and you pay your entry fee and they give you this little booklet. And the woman looked at me and she said, "Is this your first time here?" And I said, "Yes, this is my first time here." And then I don't know why, Simona, but it just came out of me. I said, "I've been dreaming about this since I was a little boy." And I'm sure she looked at me like, "Okay, dude, just go ahead, move on." But even as I say those words now, it brings me back to that moment and how emotional I was, because here was just me, this kid who grew up in just an average household in the Midwest of the United States, and I was in Africa. Like, I was there. This is something I'd dreamed about my whole life, and I was really, really there. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of my great hopes for everyone who reads my books, is that whatever their thing is, whether it's going to Africa or doing something else, that they have that moment where they can step back from the experience just for a second and say, "I did it. Like, I'm here." Because it's very powerful.
Yeah, it is very fascinating and breathtaking to be in Africa with the big animals and these this huge nature without industries, no big cities around. It's amazing to be in this great wild.
Yeah, because we can start to think that our reality is the only reality. Mm-hmm. You know, you live in which part of Germany do you reside in?
Frankfurt.
Okay. So you can live in Frankfurt. I live in the Orlando, Florida area, right? And if you're not careful, you can think that this is pretty much all there is. But there are a million different realities going on out there. And that was one of the great experiences of backpacking around the world for me, was realizing firsthand what those realities looked like. Not just seeing them on a book, you know, image, which was wonderful in terms of inspiring, not just seeing them in a video of National Geographic, but to actually be there and experience it. Because I think once you have that, you have on the cellular level the awareness that there are these other realities. And if I'm not happy with my current reality, well, any of those other million options are sitting out there waiting if I have the courage to go live them.
Yeah, and the courage to decide and to move. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so decisions play a big role in your books. Which decision had the biggest impact in your life?
Certainly this one of leaving everything behind in my early 30s and going and backpacking around the world was a really big one. There was a seed that was planted about 5 years before that. I was finishing up graduate school, working full-time, going to school at night, and I had lined up a new job, and it wasn't going to start until, I think it was August. And so I finished all of my coursework. And so I made the decision, even though I was still quite poor, to quit my job in May. And so at the end of May, I quit my job. And then I knew I would be starting this new one in August. And I went overseas to Europe for the very first time in my life. I was 28 years old. And I was in Italy. And so to see the Roman ruins, something I had read about in books, like we were just talking about. But here I was. I was in, you know, the Colosseum. I was looking at an aqueduct that was thousands of years old. That was very mind-blowing to me from the perspective of, like, this is so cool to actually be here. And, you know, here, the same kind of thing is with Africa. Like, wow, I can't believe I get to be here. And also from the perspective of there you are where history happened. And then I left there, came home for a couple of days, and went to Costa Rica for a month and backpacked around with a buddy of mine. And actually, the scene that I talk about in Das Café am Rande der Welt, where Mike is sitting on a beach and he describes eating mangoes from a tree. That was actually an experience that I had in Costa Rica, which was absolutely transformative for me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sometimes the way it works. We get these experiences, which are seeds, and those seeds, you know, if we let them grow, they turn into something big. I don't think if I had not done those trips as well as others, I don't think I would have left it all behind to go backpack around the world when I was in my early 30s. It was progressive movement.
Mm-hmm. So, there are some real life, incidents in your books. And I mean, so there are quite a lot of autobiographical elements in your books, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are also many things that are way beyond me. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that during the writing process, mm-hmm. as I am seeing the cafe world, as I'm capturing the dialogue that's happening between the characters, very, very often, especially Casey, will say something so profound, so wise, and I know instantly, like the second before I heard it and wrote it down, that was not in my head. Mm-hmm. That's definitely coming from somewhere else. It's way more wise than I was when it was coming through me. Mm-hmm. So yes, I bring my own experiences into what I do. And there's also something much bigger than me that is in all the stuff that I write.
So something very divinely inspired, right?
Very much so. Yeah, which I think mm-hmm. is very interesting. Where does it come from?
Yeah.
And the more I study other artists, whether they're mm-hmm. painting or the creative arts in any capacity, mm-hmm. almost all of them describe something like that, that they are able to tap into something when they enter the sweet spot of what they do. Mm-hmm. Again, filmmakers talk about this, scriptwriters. That it's almost like entering another world where something just kind of you and it blend and create something that wasn't there before. It wasn't in your head before that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the most unexpected reaction of a reader that you heard that's coming out of your book?
Well, I mean, at the start, I didn't know if anybody was even going to read it. And so I remember the very first person ever to read the completed manuscript. So again, it flowed through me. The cafe story through me over the course of 21 days when I came back from backpacking around the world. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what it was going to be. I thought it looked like a book. I thought it felt like a book. Mm-hmm. So the very first person ever to read the completed manuscript was a magazine editor who I didn't know. She didn't know me. And the words that she said to me when we sat down together was, "Your book has changed my life." Mm-hmm. And so that was a huge indicator from the universe that, okay, this is why this is happening. Mm-hmm. Even if you, John, can't comprehend why this is part of your story right now, trust us mm-hmm. that there's a reason why this is going to be part of your story. Mm-hmm. And over the years, there's just been so many goosebump type stories that have come about. One of the ones that leaps to mind as you're describing this was, I met a guy who was a college professor, and he had come across Das Café am Rande der Welt in the English version of it, mm-hmm. and had shared it with his students and had shared it with his daughter. His daughter was in just completed college, and so she had shared it with a friend of his. And when I met him, he told me this unbelievable story this professor did. He said that his daughter's best friend, this kid who was also in his early 20s, was diagnosed with cancer. And it was a terminal diagnosis. Even at that young age, they fought the good fight and there was nothing else. And this kid didn't want to leave responsibility for others. And so he had literally packed up his entire apartment. It makes me teary eyed thinking about this. He had packed up his entire apartment so that when he passed, that it would be easy for his parents to dispose of his things. And it was shared with me that the only thing that he left out was The Cafe on the Edge of the World, because it was the last thing that he was reading before he died. And, you know, I never, ever, ever could have imagined that type of experience when I just made the decision to go backpack around the world. Had I have not backpacked around the world, the story of The Cafe would not have flowed through me. And so there's all these decisions that we make in life that lead to something that is so much bigger than us, so much bigger than we ever could have imagined. And I think those are the ones that really hit me the hardest, because it is the hope that on a bigger scale, at the defining moments in life, that The Cafe World or the other books that I've written were able to help someone transition from where they were to wherever that they were going to go.
Yeah, so true. It's true. It helps people to go deeper, to go beyond the mundane and to experience something else, that life is something more than just daily life. That's so true.
And I think it gives people, like, one of the most common things that I hear back to me when I'm doing book events and the rest of that is people say, I thought I was alone.
Yeah.
I was the only person asking these questions. I felt like an outsider in the human race because everybody else seemed quite content just doing what everybody else was doing. And in my mind, I wasn't content, but nobody else seemed discontent. And so I felt very alone. And then they read the books and they realize they're not alone. And then we go to a book event and there's, you know, 500 people standing in line who realize, of course I'm not alone. Because look, these other 100 people obviously are thinking the same thing.
Mm.
And I think maybe that's one of the great things about technology today is compared to when I was growing up and going through my 20s, it's much easier now for people to realize that they are not alone, that these thoughts that they're thinking, the questions that they're pondering, that others are out there pondering that too. And it's easier for them to find their tribe, you know, to find inspiration.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you feel like you were alone when you were asking these types of questions?
Absolutely. You know, I was a teenager and I was the only, I had the impression I was the only one who had this passion about asking myself questions. What is my purpose? Why am I here? What is it all about? And but I didn't care that much because I just persevered in this quest and wanted to know more. And then luckily I met more people when I moved from my parents' house to the city where I studied. I studied in Hamburg, started studying there, and I met more people. So that was a good sign, you know, and a good feeling to meet people who have the same passion and are up for the same things, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing the insights that we can gain from each other and the comfort too.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I think there's something wired within us as human beings that we do seek out a tribe.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
historically, it was dangerous to be the one that was on your own. But at the same time, being an adventurer, like, I like being on my own. So there's a blend of realities there. But I think there's something that is comforting within the human experience to know that we are not alone in our thinking and that there are others who are wondering and progressing on this as well, both so that we can contribute to their success and contributions and efforts, and that we can benefit from their contributions and efforts as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that the generation, the millennials, are more drawn to your books, or do you see generation or age range specifically that's interested in your books?
No, it's really amazing again, when I do events and you have a chance to spend an hour and a half, and you've got a line of 500 people, you sort of get a proxy of what's going on. Mm. And it's amazing how many times I will have young people in their early 20s, and it's best friend and best friend, right? And so, and I ask them, how did you hear about the book? Oh, my best friend, who's right here, right? And then they come together to the event. Or so many times also it's, oh, I gave the book to my mom, or my mom gave the book to me, or my grandmother gave it to me. And so I think the connection point is it's people who care about other people. It extends across all demographic lines. And the key thing and the key theme is more the psychographics, the type of person who reads it is empathetic, they're caring, they're intrigued about life, and that they have very big hearts. I would say that's kind of the common trend.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. Let's talk about The Big Five for Life, this book. When you wrote it, did you have a specific company in your mind that you were looking at, or a company that you've known, or was it an ideal visionary company?
Yeah, the character of Thomas Dorail is an aggregate character. There were three particular leaders that I knew that I combined aspects of their personalities and then aspects of life that were not part of their personalities, such as it was very important to me that the storyline, as you know from reading it, it opens in the very first page and you learn that Thomas is dying. And then over 240 some pages, you come to love the character of Thomas and everything that he stands for and the way that he's chosen to live and lead. And then he dies. And it's very, very emotional at the ending. And so I didn't know a particular leader who had had that aspect of it, which is the mortality piece. And so that I had to tap into my own essence and the essence, as I've talked about, of kind of the universal ether out there. Now, what's fascinating is after that book had been out for a few years, I was contacted by a gentleman named Jacques Gonnet. And I write about him in the sequel to The Big Five for Life called The Big Five for Life Continued. And I talk about him and his company. And when I met him, and again, he was just a complete stranger, but he contacted me and said, I love your book. And I've been leading a company in this spirit for over two decades. And I happened to be going to Montreal, where his company is based out of. And so he and I sat down together. And I will tell you, Simona, what was incredible is that the parallels between his business partner, who died at age 55 of a brain tumor, to the Thomas character that I had written the book about and the book had been out for years, was just mind-blowing. And so, yeah, it's again, it's almost like it's out there in the ether and somehow I'm tapping into it and pulling it down and putting it into the story, but it already exists. And that was a very interesting example of finding the real version of where it existed.
So that's fascinating, really interesting.
Because there's a thousand people on the planet, right? I mean, what are the odds that I get to meet the guy who was energetically the archetype for this piece of the story, you know?
Wow. Wow. I mean, it would change the world if we had more leaders like that and more companies like this of Thomas Dorail, right?
And I'll tell you that opportunity for change, key to that is within each of us. Because if you're good at what you do and you allow yourself to work at a company that does not treat you well, that does not live in alignment with its values, then you're part of the problem. Because you're doing yourself a disservice and your talents would be better applied in a company that has those things. The analogy I like to share with people is think of it like an all-star team. So if you were putting together the World Cup team for your country, you literally take the best players from all the different leagues and you put them on one team. Well, if you're a spectacular at what you do, whether it's in accounting or product design or marketing or sales, if you take your talents and your sense of empathy and purpose and alignment with your values, and you put it in a company where other people are like that too, then you literally become the all-star team of all all-star teams as it relates to whatever it is you're selling or creating or providing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means that you're going to be more successful than the other companies, the other teams. And so it is each of our own responsibility to give ourselves the courage, to allow ourselves to have the courage, to give ourselves the permission to move ourselves into places that exist like that, because they are definitely out there. I get emails and messages constantly from leaders doing incredible things, either because they read the Big Five for Life book and said, I hadn't thought about this before, but this is the way I want my company to be. Or they say, I've been leading like this. I just never had a story to explain it to my people. And so now we use the Big Five for Life as the story to sort of wrap the whole thing together. But there are many, many great companies out there doing extraordinary things. So if you're a talented person, join one of those companies. Help be an all-star for them.
Yeah, absolutely. There are fabulous leaders, fabulous companies out there. And I think the media should be more interviewing them and put them into focus, because they are not very known. Very often they are under the radar somehow.
Yeah, I think you could apply that same concept, Simona, to all things. I firmly believe that there is a hole in the market for good news and uplifting news.
True.
Because I don't really watch the news because I find it to be very depressing. I don't find it's 100% necessary to be that informed. Like I don't feel it gives me that much more of an edge in living a happy life or a purpose-filled life. Mm-hmm. But that said, in a moment of downtime, it would be awesome to be able to go to the Good News Network and find an inspiring story of the latest super cool scientific discovery in the field of cancer research, or the latest super cool discovery in terms of ancient mummy tombs. But everything on this site would be something that is demonstrating humanity at its finest as opposed to at its worst. I think there's a huge hole in the market for that, because I think I'm not the only one that would read that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. But yeah, it's feeding the fear, feeding these old programs in humans. It's a pity.
It is. And we all have the ability to influence that. You know, the algorithms are based on human behavior. So if I don't read the stories of atrocity, leaders being horrible leaders to their people, the algorithm says, well, that's less interesting to humanity. So what's more interesting? And so if we demonstrate to the algorithms that we're looking for good content about inspiring leaders, then we're going to get more of the good content. So in part, we're not that we're entirely in control of that, but we can have an influence on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which tip would you give to people who want to venture out and finding their purpose? What would you say to people?
First, I would say it's easier than we tend to think it is. I remember when I created something called the Big Five for Life Discovery Experience, because so many people were saying, "Can you help me discover my Big Five for life?" And I didn't have an answer for that. Like, I knew how I had done it. I went off and backpacked around the world for a year, and that's a great method. But not everybody has that as part of their wish list. Not everybody has the ability to take a year off. So I sat down, and in the same spirit as the cafe world flows through me, as the Big Five for Life flows through me, I had these ideas flow through me. And the essence of it ended up being a two-day experience that people can go through, where really what they're doing, Simona, is asking themselves questions that I give them.
Mm-hmm.
Answering those questions, they uncover what's already inside of them. But I think everybody already knows their purpose. Everybody knows their Big Five for Life. It's just covered under so many layers. And so I tell people, I think you can discover this stuff on your own 100%. And part of it is turning off the access to everything else. And so it's like, imagine if you were trying to calmly meditate, but you had heavy metal music being played in a band in the same
Yeah.
And on a micro scale, that's kind of what we try and do as we go through life. We're surrounded by this cacophony of distractions, and at the same time, we're trying to find clarity. That's tough. And so whether it's putting yourself in quiet environments and just allowing yourself to be introspective and reflective, or whether it is putting yourself in the hands of a great coach who can walk you through exercises like I've talked about, who can help release that information from inside of you. But again, the key message is it's easier than people think. I know with 100% certainty that people going through discovery can find it in 2 days, because I've seen it happen thousands and thousands of times. So if you're out there and asking yourself, oh my gosh, I've been struggling with this for a long time, I think it's impossible, know in your heart of hearts that it is not impossible, that it's very much just waiting to happen. So find a good person who can guide you through it, and let it happen. And the wonderful thing about that is I think so much of the stress of life comes from uncertainty. When you know the direction that you want your life to go, decision making becomes so much easier. You know, should I take this job opportunity or not? Should I go on that date or not? Do I want to do this on my Friday afternoon, evening or not? It all becomes very easy when you have the direction that you want your life to go, because it's either yes, that decision will help move me that direction, or it won't.
Yeah,
and exactly. So I talk about that in the Big Five for Life book when Thomas is introducing the character of Katie. And Katie is so locked in. She's the one who goes to Africa and back. And she's so locked in on her purpose that nothing throws her off course. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a wonderful place to be when we allow ourselves to lock in on the life that we want to live and be true to that.
Mm. Yeah. I believe so, too, that we all have a purpose, that every company has a purpose. And it is there. It is in the DNA of each mm-hmm. being or each entity. And you have to go deeper than the mundane to unearth it. It's like a treasure chest or like diamonds. You have to bring it up. Mm-hmm. You have to bring it into the light of the day. And,
yeah.
And that requires reflection and space, you know, having time and space for yourself. And but it is there, and everybody can find it, and everybody has a purpose. That is for sure. I can definitely say that also for my clients. I've seen it. And you said you can find it very quickly. I have made this. I've seen this too, that it can come up or come out very quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And I know in doing my research about you that yoga is a big part of your story, and so for you, I would say that's one of the clues, right? And so for yoga, or for somebody else, yoga may not be the answer, but for you, that is part of the answer.
Yeah.
For me, being an adventurer is part of the answer. I feel fulfilled when I'm out there doing something different, when I'm in a kayak and exploring different waters, you know, when I'm in a country that I don't know and I don't know the cultures. That's when I feel alive. I feel like I'm living my purpose. And so what's wonderful is when you're doing your work with your clients, when somebody goes through the Big Five for Life course, they have this new awareness, and it's almost like we give ourselves permission. So it was inside of us before. Now we have a view of what it looks like. And then we get permission from ourselves to actually do it. So here's your purpose. Okay, I'm going to go live that. Fantastic. Sounds good. Go do it. And then once you've been out there living your purpose for a while and you see how good that feels, it actually feels painful to not live it.
Yes. Yeah. I totally can attest that. Absolutely. If you know it, you have to live it too. You cannot unlearn it or forget about it.
It's an interesting thing because Casey talks about this in the first Cafe book. She says it's like knowing the X on the treasure map. But once you know the X, it's very hard to pretend it's not there. It will become physically, emotionally challenging to not live it. And I feel that way on a very visceral level for myself. Again, I love to do adventure type stuff. If I go a week or 10 days and I haven't done something adventurous, I literally feel physically not as good as I do when I'm doing something. And so, but the good news is that for everyone who's listening who says, well, that doesn't sound so great, John. The good news is that the way you feel when you actually are living your purpose is so extraordinary compared to the everyday that you realize the trade-off is well worth it. It's almost like a built-in barometer system to help you move your life in the direction that you truly want it to go. Because if you didn't feel dissatisfied in the times you're not living your purpose, then there wouldn't be much motivation to live your purpose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you've said it several minutes ago. It's like being in this sweet spot, you know, when everything mm-hmm. flows, when you're so connected to yourself and to something bigger and higher. It's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful feeling of, highest connection, highest state of consciousness. And that's really wonderful. That changes everything.
Yeah, and how cool, as you were just saying, that it's available to every single person. Yeah. It's not a special gift for the chosen few.
No.
Literally, this is available to everyone. And somebody may be thinking, well, why is it, as Simona said, diamonds that are buried? Well, I think that's part of the human experience, is discovering who you are as a human and what mm-hmm. you want to do with your life and what is the purpose of your life. Mm-hmm. If you simply got to the age of 6 and someone gave you a piece of paper and all you had to do was read it and there it was, I don't know, you wouldn't have really earned it, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know how good you'd feel about the experience. It would be too easy. Yeah. And so it's designed as it's designed so that we challenge ourselves and have to push ourselves. But when we do, we get the prize.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have rituals or practices that keep that helps you stay in the flow or to enhance your creativity or your own development? Do you have something that you do on a regular basis?
Yeah, I start every day with 20 minutes of breathing. It's meditative breathing. I use Wim Hof, who's, if you haven't looked at his YouTube videos, wonderful, and puts all of his information out there. Like, you only have to watch the video a few times to get the essence of what he's teaching in terms of the technique for the breathing. And I know that's like the baseline of what he teaches, but that's easy to access. And I find for myself that is an extraordinary way to begin the day.
Yeah.
And I was interviewing somebody on my podcast, and they shared something which I really took to heart. They were an athlete, and they were talking about how the days you don't feel like working out are the days you need it more than ever. And that reframe was such a profound aha moment for me. And so as much as I love the breathing, there are some days where I look at my to-do list and I'm like, oh, I have so many things that are calling to me in the morning. But now the minute I see that, I go, oh, and what that means is breathing is more important than ever as a way to start this day. So I'm very, very committed to it. I literally do it every single day. I think it's wonderful for your health. I think it's wonderful for your mental health. Mm-hmm. And naturally, it leads to, I do about 35 minutes of stretching after that. So I have a very dedicated routine that I do that keeps me physically where I want to be. Mm-hmm. So those two things have been very, very positive and profound. And I encourage everyone to do that. And I know that it's easy to look at our calendars and say, well, I just don't have the hour. But the truth is, we're spending the hour doing something. It's just a matter of saying, what's the bigger priority for me? What makes me feel more connected? What makes me feel better physically? And then it's just committing yourself to it. And like I said, putting a reframe on it that says, when the days you feel like doing it the least, that's probably the day you need it the most.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that I do is I have a mantra technique that I use. And this is something where in any moment of downtime, in the first moments when I wake up, in the last moments before I go to sleep, I just recite a mantra that I've created for the life that is the life that I want to be living. And that has been very profound.
Mm, yeah, beautiful. Very beautiful.
How about yourself?
I have a morning ritual as well. And it's meditation and some exercises as well. So it's... Well, meditation for me is a consciousness exercise and also this body exercise to train both, you know. Movement, exercising is important, and getting out of thoughts and into a higher consciousness is, for me, it's key, and to start the day and to always connect to myself and be in a flow and in a higher state somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Start the day in a higher state of consciousness.
It's kind of like, as you're describing that, it makes me think that it's almost like reminding ourselves. So I'm trying to think of a good analogy for this, but let's say that you were a little kid and you lived somewhat close to the zoo and you loved going to the zoo. Right. But if you don't go to the zoo for months and months and months and months or years, eventually you start to forget why you love the zoo so much. You forget what that feels like. Mm-hmm. So if you were a little kid every day and you looked at a picture of you at the zoo as the start of your day, it would remind you to then go ask your mom or go ask your dad, can we go to the zoo today? You know?
Yeah.
And so when you were describing your morning routine, I think that's part of it, is when you start connecting, when you start the day connecting with as close to perfection as you can, whether it's through your breath work, your body movement work, then you remind yourself instantly, this is what it feels like. As opposed to going through the entire day and kind of disconnecting from what it feels like and maybe hoping to connect with it at the
Exactly. For me, it's also about connecting to myself or staying connected to myself and not being pulled away or pulled into so many different directions, staying true to myself, staying true to what's important for me, staying concentrated and focused on that. For me, that is, that makes me happy, you know, not being distracted, but focused on what I love. That's important.
Yeah. And so I tend to be very creative, obviously, in the stuff that I do when I'm, when I'm focusing on my writing. And I also can be very analytical in designing processes so that I keep myself in alignment with the life that I want to live. And so the Big Five for Life is a perfect example of that, that when you know your Big Five for Life, then every day you can look at your to-do list and you can say, okay, if I do everything that's on this to-do list, am I going to get to the end of the day and feel like I made progress towards my Big Five for Life? Did I spend any minutes in alignment with my Big Five for Life, or didn't I?
Yeah.
And so that's a very tactical, a very specific way of looking at life. And I think that's really useful because even if you're starting today at ground zero and you say, you know what, if I was to look at the last 7 days, there is not a minute that I was in alignment with the life that I want to live. Okay, well, coming out of this discussion that you're hearing Simona and I talk about, can you find 1 minute today? Just 1 minute, whether it's reading from a book or doing a stretch or doing 1 minute of breathing exercises or taking 1 minute to drink 3 glasses of water over the course of the day, whatever. But can you find a minute that you made a change in the direction towards the life that you want to live? And then the next day, you just have to find another minute, right? Because you've already perfected it the day before. This is very tactical, very analytical, but these small, subtle changes grow into big, dramatic life changes.
Absolutely.
And so I like your approach. If you start every day by saying, what would make today a great day? And you had 4 things on that list. Okay, I want to do my yoga. I want to do my breathing. I want to do whatever. And you start the day with those 4 things. The day is a win. Like anything on top of that is bonus, but the day is already a win.
Yeah.
And again, it's very tactical, very left brain, but it's very effective as a way to sort of keep the chaos in check. World can be very chaotic out there.
Absolutely. I have a last question for you, John. What are your projects with books or with your creativity? What have you planned for the future?
I'm actually writing now. So very often, as you might imagine, when I was on, so I was on tour last year for Urashim Cafe Amrana Devat, the fourth book in the Cafe series. And having the chance to interact with amazing fans again was so special, and seeing so many people, because we did 11 cities across Germany, Switzerland. And so one of the most common things that happened is people would ask questions, like a lot of questions. And I noticed that there were some themes in those questions. And so literally I would go city by city by city, and I would be answering a lot of the same questions again and again. And so I thought, huh, that might be an interesting book, is questions and answers. And so, yeah, I have a book that I'm working on right now, which will come out next year, called, the working title right now is Questions and Answers to Some of Life's Big, Big Questions. And then there's also just some quirky, interesting stuff that people have asked me over the years. And so we put out a message on our Instagram channel. As a matter of fact, if anyone's listening to this, feel free to go to John Strelecki on Instagram. And if you've got a question, send it to me, because it just may be one of the ones that gets incorporated into the book. But there's been some interesting sort of funny ones as well. And so it gives me a chance to bring a lighter side to self-development, because I think sometimes if we're not careful, it becomes very heavy. And listen, life is supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
And so I know that it can be challenging. I've been there. But at the same time, if we can keep the lightness as we're going through the challenges, it makes the whole experience more positive.
What a beautiful message to close our conversation, that lightness is what it's all about in life. Thank you so much, John.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for doing what you're doing out there.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Schön, dass du hier bist. Ich bin Simona Deckers und dies ist der Path of Purpose Podcast.